usually we do a lot more work ahead of time, and today we're...
Instead, we were dicking around.
Right.
It's Thursday, after all.
Yeah. It is Thursday, yeah. And we're not in our Monday swing.
Looks like someone's got a case of the Thursdays.
Hell no. You get your ass kicked for saying something like that. All right, here goes. Welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life and playing music so good it makes people go, mm.
And the air guitar. Don't forget the air guitar. I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
My name is Brock Dittus, and we are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains, transit, and simpler living. And today, two guys we met 2 years ago when Brock was drunk and Adele puked.
That's right. They're in the room with Bobby Corbusier. Hello.
Hello.
Is it? Yeah, it's Corbusier, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You got it.
Not Corbusier.
Well,
it's up to you.
Yeah.
I say sabotage.
Matter of debate among my family.
Right. Right. But. Okay. We won't get into that, I'm sure. Unless we could call him in.
Yeah.
If you want
to get him
in
here. Dave.
And Spencer. Hello.
Hi.
Spencer, I don't know your last name.
It's okay.
Do you have one? Or do
Callahan.
Okay. Yeah. Spencer Callahan.
Standard,
there we go.
Pronunciation as well, so you're good.
All right. Yeah. I'm adding that to my contacts.
Okay.
Yeah. You know that thing when you have people in your contacts that you only have by first name? You're like, what's it's that one.
And they're calling you and you're like, hey.
How's it going?
Yeah.
That guy?
Hi. Give me a little something to work with.
Number
here.
One? Yeah.
What's up, chief?
I have a lot of weird contacts in my phone that just something was happening at that time, and so I didn't get their last name, but I just put a little trail of whatever was going on at that time, or what I talked about with that person.
Like, so it's like...
Tony with the cool rock.
Yep.
Or Brock, who was drinking too much, or something
Brock
like that.
Brock the drunk.
I've totally done that. Like, we met a guy on a bike tour one time who we called Jacob Durango, because
we met him in Durango.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Daniel Harkins is still Daniel Midnight Mystery Ride.
Fabulous.
In my contact book. And I don't ever change that, even if I become best friends with that person.
I'm like, that's your contact information forever.
There we go. Yeah. That's a good idea, actually. Yeah, you can put their last name like in the notes or something.
Yeah.
Or like in their address. It's like address line 2 or something. Anyways, we're here.
We are.
So, I have a confession to make.
Yeah. Confess.
And
to
I will
me.
Say this with, people know.
Are you about to fire me from the podcast?
No.
You're fired.
No, so, you know how like I've gone on and on about how Strava's so dumb?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I downloaded
Fuck
it last
Strava,
week.
Right? Am I right?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. So about that.
You're Strava-ing this podcast right now, aren't you?
Yeah, it's still running. I am. Yep. Yep. I'm going to burn like 300 calories from shifting in my seat as I tell this story. No, it's just like the whole thing that I was exposed to Strava through Bike Snob. And so he has a very particular view of Strava. And that's like, you know, well, it's dumb. And so for like the longest time, I thought,
his view is dumb, or his assessment of Strava is dumb.
The latter.
Okay.
Yeah. And so he's all about, well, like, yeah, basically don't let tech get in the way of fun, and don't let like numbers and performance get in the way of like the function of your bicycle. So for the longest
time, how do you know you're having fun if you don't have the numbers to tell you?
Well, and if it doesn't end up on the internet.
Right, I know. Right.
Did it actually happen?
If no one sees that you're having fun, did you have fun?
Exactly. Right, that's the question. And so for the longest time, Strava was just a thing I didn't really want to.
Right.
I didn't like, I didn't subscribe to. But it turns out...
On principle.
Yes.
On principle.
On principle. It turns out my principles might have been slightly flawed because I just got it this week. And it's actually very, it's very interesting. It's kind of fun. The social component is cool because Darren down in Australia...
Oh, right.
Is watching me ride my bike, I guess. And Harkins is on Strava, and he blows up this town.
Oh, I bet he
does. With his legs. He's a strong rider. So, yeah, basically it's interesting to me to see how my perception of something was colored, and I can I can look at it through fresh eyes, having actually tried it. It's like my old housemate who said, I'll never eat hummus. I'll never even try it.
Oh, really?
It's gross. Yeah. But that guy was wrong.
Yeah.
Pure wrong.
I don't know if he ever tried it.
Okay.
But I know he was wrong because hummus is delicious.
Yeah, hummus is not Strava. These are totally different things.
So,
but would you say hummus is maybe the Strava of blended bean dishes?
It could be. Like, it seems distasteful until you try it, and then you're like, oh, this is magical.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So this all came about because I used to use a different app to track my ride just to find out how many calories I was burning.
You used to map your ride.
I used to map my ride.
Yes.
I can't remember what the name of the app was.
I don't either.
So I had that app, and it got a bunch of upgrades, and suddenly, like, it didn't work on my old phone anymore because I have an iPhone 4, not a 4S.
Right.
A 4.
Oh, you poor thing.
I know, right? It's virtually archaic. It's like carrying a flip phone or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And everyone
can
tell.
You just yell at it until it does what you want, kind of.
That's right, yeah. And it doesn't respond because it doesn't have Siri.
Yeah.
So, it's a really old phone, and my tracking device, that app that I used to use, didn't work anymore. It just, like, I would open it, and it would crash, and I would open it again, it would crash again. And I never really, it became useless at that point. So I stopped using it.
Oh.
But I was like, I really want to evaluate my exercise because I've been running for a while, for about the past 3 weeks or so.
So Strava works for running as well.
It does.
Okay.
And here's the thing. It works out so much better than that other app that I was using, whose name I can't remember. So I guess I am, if there's crow to be eaten, I will eat it.
All right.
I was wrong.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Not about you being wrong, but just being wrong in general.
But you should think about that more often.
about you being wrong?
Yes.
Or about, oh.
Yes.
No, like, I think I'm okay with being wrong.
That's a good trait to have.
Right. I don't like to be wrong per se.
Uh-huh.
Or I don't look forward to being wrong. I don't, like, take a position knowing I'm going to be wrong. But I think in a way I look forward to being proven wrong.
Oh.
Or
interesting.
Or being shown that I'm wrong on a particular thing.
You mean like social masochism? Or something like that?
And now you've unraveled my entire psychology.
Maybe we should just move on from that.
No, but like, because that means I've learned something.
Oh, yes. Know? Oh, yeah.
That means, like,
good point.
Like, I'm now on a better trajectory.
Makes,
like,
sense to me.
If I believed, you know, that, you know, all bikes are stupid. For whatever reason. And then
some people
got on a bike and was like, wow, this is great. I've been wrong all these years.
I was terribly
mistaken. Now I'm on a better trajectory in my life.
Yeah. 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 So anyways, I am happy to be able to both report my exercise to the world and be proud of it and flaunt it in the face of those who think that I don't.
Yeah.
Like, if people are curious, if they question my level of activity, I can point them to the data.
You got a lot of people like that in your life?
No, I don't.
Okay,
I don't.
That's
but
good.
But I need to find some
you
now,
need
so
to
I can
find
do
them
that.
Now, yeah. Yeah.
But that's what Strava's all about, right? So I haven't engaged with the with the general public.
Oh no!
No,
no,
because
there's the social networking aspect of it too. Well,
there's
right?
the social networking, and then there's like the non-social networking. There's like you can race against other quote. Athletes, unquote, in your area.
Huh.
So I don't self-identify as an athlete, but apparently that's how Strava thinks of me.
Oh,
so,
yes.
Yeah. So I'm already up against all these other guys on their leaderboards and such. I'm not really excited about that. I'm not really interested in it.
Are all these stats, like, or numbers, are they, like, publicly accessible?
I made mine private.
Okay.
Yeah, but they could be.
They could be.
Largely, I just don't want people to see where I, like, start and end my rides.
Well, I just had this great idea. I'm gonna start a Strava fantasy league now.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
You heard it here first. Patent pending.
That's a great idea.
It's a good thing to not do, though. I feel like I heard this in the cyclocross season that people were following Strava routes and stealing bikes out of houses.
Oh,
because they knew that
kidding.
They were really fancy bikes. In those
yeah.
Right.
See, that's where, yeah, that's why I made mine.
Don't
private.
Start it at your door.
Right. Right. Like, they notice, like, all Strava's start and end at this one particular place.
Yeah.
you see that pattern and go, oh, I can go grab this bike now.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. So, well, that's kind of like the danger of lots of these kinds of things. Like anytime you use any sort of public GPSing, like Twitter, even Twitter can be used, like if you're not careful with your settings.
Yeah.
I think, what was it? Like I posted a tweet at one point, like four years ago, something like that. And someone was like, oh, I saw that picture of your bedspread. And now I know where your house is.
Oh, Jesus.
This is my housemate. But I was like, well, maybe I should change my settings. So, yeah. The other thing I realized from installing Strava is that apparently coasting downhill doesn't burn calories.
Oh, right.
Because I thought my morning commute burned like 750 calories, something like
right.
that. Turns out it's only about 300.
Because the other half of your commute is mostly downhill.
Yeah, yeah. The second half of my morning commute is like just cruising down to the Columbia River. And so I feel great about the cruise, but I also realize that, yeah, I don't. It's like fewer beers. So
did you feel like really confused when you were using the other map? Like, I'm burning all these calories and yet...
No, I felt entitled.
I see. I'm burning all these calories, so...
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right.
So it just assumes you're not pedaling downhill, or does it track your cadence, or how does that work?
I think if I had a power meter, it could.
Oh, okay.
But I don't want a power meter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Baby steps.
Well.
What if,
yeah.
This is something that I thought of, because I'm curious about the mileage that I ride or things like that. And like Strava's kind of replaced the onboard computers that a lot of bikes or bicyclists used to put on there.
It's funny, right?
Yeah, but it like a power meter, like I don't know if Strava could do that.
Not all the things that it can do, no.
Yeah, so you'd still need an onboard computer. And so I kind of wanted one at one point.
Mm.
But I didn't want to have it mounted on my handlebars because I knew I had to stare at it and like hate myself the whole time.
You needed it like tucked under your saddle?
Right, exactly. Put it on like my bottom bracket or something.
It's not a bad idea.
I can only look at it when I'm working on my bike.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
Which just encourages you to do maintenance, or at least reminds you that it needs to be done.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Nice. So Mexico. You went to Mexico.
I went to Mexico.
We talked about Brompton's and the cool shop down there. We talked about traffic and walking and distractions and how they don't exist.
Yes.
In Mexico. And so what else stands out to you from your trip there?
I only spent like 3 days in Mexico City.
Uh-huh.
Did I mention I missed the Ciclovia?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
You didn't, but I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, it was kind of a choice I made.
Okay. That's where they shut down the streets and people ride bikes.
Yeah.
It's like Sunday Parkways in Portland, but every day.
Every week.
Every week.
Every week. Every Sunday. I don't see why we can't do it.
I know, right?
Every Sunday.
What if there are parkways open to bicycles on Sundays?
Every Sunday.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Hashtag every Sunday.
I take it this wasn't Mexico City this was happening in.
Oh, no, that was in Mexico
City.
Yeah, right? It's like, I can't remember the name of the road, but it's one of their main roads. They shut it down, and you could travel the length of the city.
So Mexico City can do it.
Yes. A population of 20 million people.
Right. Maybe we need more people in the Portland area to make that work.
Come move to Portland for the Sunday Parkways.
And bring with you your dreams of streets being shut down for recreational purposes.
So anyways, it was something we chose to miss because we were there Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Uh-huh.
And Monday, all the museums closed. Tuesday, we were only going to be there like for long enough to go to the airport.
Right.
And I wanted to see the museums. Because Mexico City not only shuts down their roads every Sunday, but they also have more museums than any other city on the planet.
Right. Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of pictures of you in museums that I saw on social media. Not that you're on social media.
Someone posted them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so unfortunately, because it's a Sunday, a lot of students get in free and... So the lines are pretty long. So we spent a lot of time in lines too.
Oh, okay.
But it was
kind of like amusement parks,
right?
Yeah,
right. But it was this sort of like calculated, not risk, but sacrifice we had to make.
Yeah,
like, couldn't do the Ciclovia because we wanted to like see Trotsky's house. We wanted to see Kahlo's house.
And you saw those places.
It was awesome.
Which seems like it's worth it.
We tried to go to Bellas Artes, which is like their big main art museum, and they had this awesome like pre-Russian and post-Russian revolution art.
Uh-huh.
It was an art style that I studied specifically
when
I was in college.
It's kind of your thing.
Yeah. But it was so freaking crowded. We couldn't even get in.
Is there any sort of like, there should be a fast pass for museums.
There is.
Is there?
Yeah, if you're a senior citizen.
Oh, okay. So
if you're, I don't know what the age is.
If you live long enough.
I'm sure it's like 55 or older.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which, you know.
You should start like.
Not that long anymore.
Like platinum bleaching your hair.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and then, yeah.
Just walk in.
And then forge the documents. Not that I'm saying you should do that. That would be wrong. We don't advocate for such things.
When I was young, I once wanted a fake ID, not to like buy booze, but just so that I could get into the 21 and over concerts.
There you go.
Because Pittsburgh, fuck Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Is that where you're from?
I lived there like for some of my college.
Either of you spent time in Pittsburgh?
My coworkers.
Fortunately, no.
Okay. Just telling me about Pittsburgh last night, though. You were saying there's a lot of like abandoned steel
mills, a lot of abandoned schools and hotels too. I used to explore.
That's what he was saying. So it's really cool to go explore them, and there's like a lot of really good graffiti artists.
Yep.
And like art installments inside of them.
It's kind of in connection, sort of connecting to our last episode with Joe Beal. Like, you know, no one really gave a shit for a long time in Pittsburgh, and so. You know, there's people who are a little bit more creative with their time. Sneak in to hotels and schools that have been previously closed. And
right. You know, with permission of the owner, the door was open. Yeah.
I didn't. I can say personally, I never cut any chains or locks or kicked down any doors.
Nice, nice. You always entered legally.
The doors were already open by the time I got there.
Right, it's tacit permission.
Yeah.
No, but we should do a whole show on urban exploration someday. I feel
it
like that's
cool.
It's the sort of thing that you used to be able to do that in Portland a lot. I feel like there are fewer places to explore now. Yeah. But one of my friends got I think caught like checking out one of these buildings.
Oh, really?
It might have been. It's one of the ones that's being like redeveloped into like condos and offices and stuff now on the Inner East Side. But I think he was caught, and then they were made to do community service, which is something that he was already into. Like it wasn't really a punishment. He was just like, "All right, so I get to help out the community again. That's great." So
can I retro like fit my hours already?
Right, right. So it's like he was immune to the consequences.
Right.
It was kind of nice.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's cool.
But So anyways, so yeah, you went to a bunch of museums and you saw a bunch of cool things.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Only 3 days were really spent in Mexico City. I was actually in Cuernavaca for most of my time.
Yeah,
or even south.
Did you? You both took Brompton bicycles with you?
No. Didn't.
Okay.
Because Clever had a really good sales year, and so
there we go. There were fewer.
All of their what would be their rental stock.
There we go.
Got sold.
Hey, and that's not bad news.
It's not bad news for them.
Nice. Well, it's still good to have you, and thank you so much for the mezcal that you brought back.
Oh yeah,
Con Gusano.
Yeah, I noticed today they're finally all gone, huh?
I think there's two, unless Adele finished them off. I don't know.
I think they might have been finished off.
Find out. Have you guys ever had mezcal with the worm in it?
No.
It's like it's more like a larvae, but it's a thing that you can get, and so it led me down this thought path of I want to find a good translation of the lyrics to the They Might Be Giants song Dr. Worm.
Oh.
As in, they call me Dr. Worm. Hello, how are you? I'm Dr. Worm. I'm interested in things. I'm not a real doctor, but I am a real worm. I am an actual... Yeah. So I want to find a good translation of that into Spanish, and then I want to sing that song in Spanish.
And just translate it yourself.
Dr. Gusano, yeah. So anyways, that's... Yeah. So that's my long-term plan.
This is a good goal to have.
Right, right. But our short-term plan is podcasting.
You eat the worm?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I mean... Because you can get.
Did you eat it? Did you actually like masticate, or did you?
I chewed it. Yes.
Oh, you did.
Yes.
I was thinking you just swallowed it whole.
No. I feel like those because they're larvae, and so they have like
things
texture
to grab on.
Yeah. Sure. They're worth chewing. So anyways, it's interesting, but it's kind of like you can get dried larvae as a snack. You know, it comes in like a little plastic pack or something. And so
there's going to be a day where that's pretty much everybody's going to have to eat that.
Yeah, you know? It's not so bad.
condensed bricks of mealworms.
That's right, yeah.
Pull out of your jersey pocket. Yeah. And
right, right. Like, what was that movie? On the train?
Snowpiercer.
Yes, oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Not so, a pleasant scene.
So terrible that everyone was eating beetles. Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Personally, I thought that scene was going to result in, like, oh, we're eating other people, but...
I was reading an article. This is a bit of a rabbit trail, but I was reading an article about a cricket farmer. And
a cricket farmer.
Not a cricket farmer that farms crickets for bait, because those are pretty common.
Uh-huh.
But a cricket farmer who farms cricket for food.
All right.
Here in the U.S.
You know.
In Ohio, actually.
Lots of people eat insects around the world. It's not that bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And.
Not always
like
my bag.
His big thing was, you know, there's going to be a day where, like, it's just no longer sustainable to... you know, continue raising beef.
Right, you know? Right.
He specifically name-checked the beef industry several times.
Yeah, because cows are fucking huge.
Yes.
And beetles, not so huge.
And I can't remember what the ratio was.
They raise themselves.
For, like, you know, how much it takes one cow, like how much water it takes for one cow.
Oh,
it's ridiculous.
It's, yeah.
It's crazy.
It's the best argument for, like,
the ratio is. And, it's of course, way less for a cricket.
Totally. You know. I can say I'm not a vegetarian, not a vegan, but like the beef industry, the cattle industry, biggest contributor to lots of
greenhouse
gases going into the air. Yeah. And erosion and environmental degradation. Even if you don't believe in climate change, you can still believe in erosion and the smell of cow shit and how like a stockyard is a very unpleasant place to be. So, I'd agree.
All right.
Yeah.
I hear insects are pretty nutritious as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're super
protein rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was another thing that the guy was harping on was it's like 21 grams of protein per 100 grams of cricket pulp.
Let's be cricket ranchers. Let's do it.
Yeah. Versus I think it's 26 grams of protein for every 100 grams of red meat.
Yeah.
Or beef. So, like, yeah, sure, there's a little bit more, but the ratio is still much closer with crickets.
Yeah. I'll be political for just a minute.
Yeah.
Just for a minute.
Get out the drums.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. This is not really a call to action,
but. Oh, never mind then.
You know what wouldn't have happened if the cattle industry was not as pervasive as it is?
Genocide?
The goddamn Malheur occupation.
Oh,
with all those damn ranchers.
Fuck those guys.
Yeah. They went to jail. They deserved it. That being said, it's never good when somebody dies. I'm not saying I advocate that. Just saying, I'm glad the occupation is over.
No,
but it's good to clarify.
Yeah,
it's good to clarify because people read into lots of things.
That's true.
Even people as esteemed and incisive as our listeners.
So,
but yeah,
I'm going to go down one more rabbit trail because you mentioned the mailer people. Oh, no, this has...
Oh. Okay.
But I went to OMSI After Dark last night.
Oh, yeah?
The
local science museum.
Yes. My tenderoni gave me tickets because it was a superhero theme one.
Ooh.
And got to sit in and watch this panel of four really great comic book writers.
Nice.
Only one that I knew right off the bat.
Uh-huh.
But then as they introduced them, you know, and the various comics that they wrote, I was like, oh, yeah, I know that one. And I know that one.
Nice.
Yeah. But anyways, one of the writers there, connected sort of how she writes an antagonist or a villain in her books with how she saw the Mailer County people.
Fascinating.
And how, like, these people don't really believe that they're wrong.
Not the people of Mallard County, but the people occupying the refuge.
Not all of Mallard County, right. Of course. Yeah, but the occupiers. And, like, they don't believe that they're wrong. They actually believe that they're doing the right thing.
Yes,
and
the Lord was unpleased.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's sort of how she writes her antagonist.
Oh, right. Like, they believe. Yeah, like, they don't see themselves.
Even right down to the Joker, like, doesn't see themselves as, like, the villain of their story.
They're misguided heroes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like there is that moment in each of her comics where, like, the villain kind of really realizes that they are a villain.
Mm.
Of course, like, it doesn't necessarily change their actions. It just changes their motivation.
Sunk investment.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I've been evil all these years. I might as well continue.
Sounds like they might have realized that at one point when the community was there
talking
with them and saying, get out.
Everybody votes. You go.
Yeah. So anyways, political thing concluded. Unless anybody else has any more politics. We don't censor this. Anything flies, really. But yes. So anyways, hey. So you guys, we brought you in to chat about this bike tour that you took.
We did that.
So yeah. Bobby, where did it start? Where did it end?
Well, it started in Portland, Oregon, here.
Good place to start.
Yeah, thought so. And we set out with the intention of going to Portland, Maine. Actually ended in New York City.
There we go.
So
nice.
New York City is respectable, though.
Yeah. Yeah, we quickly met a couple of guys, Luke and David. We met them it was one day after we crossed into Idaho.
Okay.
At a campsite, and they were headed from Seaside, Oregon to New York City.
Nice.
And we rode with them most of the way across the country and got to be really good friends with them. And,
that's super cool.
We rode with them till Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and then they went south around the Great Lakes, and we went into Ontario.
Okay.
Around that direction.
Into Canada.
Then, yeah. And at some point, we were like, let's just go to New York City. It's going to be...
Why not?
It's going to be a grand finish line, and we'll get to hang out with them at the end.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was the intention of going further to Portland after that, but as soon as we got there, we were like, okay, this is it. We're good.
Yeah.
Like you found out when you got there, you're like, oh, this makes more sense, or this is a good terminus for us.
A little both.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Portland, Maine would be a little anticlimactic coming from New York City. My first time being there.
Yeah.
Same.
Okay.
So Spencer, where are you from originally?
I'm from here, Portland,
Oregon. You're from Portland, yeah. So New York, what was that like from a Portlander's perspective?
It was very intense. It was very exciting. Probably the most dense urban population I'd seen ever. The charm definitely wore off pretty quick. I think we were only there for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Also broke and very tired.
And that was enough. Yeah.
But I get the appeal. I don't think it would be my sort of town. But
nice place to visit, but you wouldn't want to live there.
Yeah, the energy is very palpable, and I get it. Yeah.
Nice. Very
it's
cool.
Very unnatural place too.
Yeah. Well, it's all constructed, right? It's all like it's a completely.
It's a giant piece of trash.
Manufactured landscape. Can we excerpt that and put that out for the world?
Yeah. I'm going on the record. I mean, when it's trash night, it's very noticeable. There's just trash everywhere on the street because that's just how they do it. And it was interesting.
Right. East Coast Trash Day is kind of like Portland free boxes because you look at and see stuff. My wife's parents and family live in Boston right now, or the Boston area. And I remember the first time I visited, walking around, I was like, wow, it's like so many people have free boxes. And it turns out it's just like old furniture and things that people don't want that's set out for the trash truck. So
is it like anything goes over there?
Well, I mean, it's just like, it all kind of sits out in a big box or a pile or something. And then the trash truck comes by and picks it up.
There's no curbside trash cans or dumpsters. You just put your bags of trash on the street and the government takes care of it, in theory, right?
I think there's cans where they live, but that's also...
That was New York City, at least.
Right. New York, yeah, exactly.
Are they just deciding, like, well, we're not going to get rid of any rats anytime soon. We might as well just, feed them.
Like, every bag you kick, the rats are just scurrying all over.
We're just not going to make it harder for them.
It's an admission of defeat. Yeah. No, but it was like virtually indistinguishable. Indistinguishable for me to figure out, like, is this a free box or is it a pile of trash? Which also says something about the state of Portland's free boxes.
Right. You have some trash and you don't want it. It's a free box now. And you just put it on the street.
Another man's treasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That couch that's been sitting in the rain for a month.
Yep.
It's like someone's definitely going to come pick that up.
It's a hot commodity. You guys ever seen... there was a mattress, I think, in a neighborhood that I saw like consistently for a month where somebody had spray painted free across the side of the mattress and leaned it up against a telephone pole.
Someone's going to want this.
Right. So anyways, yeah. But Bobby, you were talking about the guys that you met up with. You met them in Idaho.
Yep.
And how did you deliberate on whether you're going to travel with them or not? Or did it just kind of naturally happen?
Well, my experience with bike touring is that, sometimes you bump into people on the road and then you sort of just leapfrog for maybe a long time.
Right.
You guys are generally traveling the same routes at the same pace. looking for the same things. So, you know, we didn't like agree to ride together at first, mm-hmm. but we just ended up doing that for a while.
Right? Just the organic. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Oh, it's a common experience for anybody doing the Pacific Coast because everyone gets the purple book. And like everyone stays at the same campgrounds at night. And so you'll find those people.
Yeah.
Was this a predetermined route that you guys took, or was it?
It started off that way. I bought a full map set from Adventure Cycling Association all the way across the United States.
There we go.
We used it to Missoula, and after that, we just started winging it.
Nice.
We stopped at a bar, and somebody told us, like, oh, you should go this way. It's this nice gravel road along a creek. You're going to love it. It's going to be awesome.
Nice. Do you remember which bar you were at? It's okay if you don't.
No, it had a giant billboard with a sign that said the Testicle Festival.
Yeah, the Bull Testicle Place.
Yeah, right. That was like what they were famous for.
This is in Missoula?
This is just outside of Missoula, just east of Missoula.
Right, because Aaron, you spent some time there, and I've spent some time there.
Yeah.
Your brother lives there, so.
I don't remember much about a testicle festival.
I'm sure there is one, though. I mean, yeah.
It's there.
It wouldn't surprise me, I suppose. There's a lot of ranchers out that way.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But and, she said, this is Fish Creek Access Road.
Okay.
It was great. And then, I don't know, I think just after that, we were like, just felt more natural to us, the way that we plan things, to just kind of wing it, talk to locals.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Find out the best route, you know.
It's a lot more.
Google Maps is pretty useful.
Mm-hmm.
State issue bike maps are very useful.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Spencer, were you on the same page with like, hey, let's ditch the pre-planned route and have an adventure?
Yeah, Missoula was an interesting one because there was a few heavier trafficked routes that also would have led us to some particularly interesting things, like potentially going up north towards Glacier. I like that. I wanted to find some dirt to ride on at least temporarily. And
yeah, ACA routes tend to opt toward where there's going to be a lot of facilities for cyclists.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to put you on a dirt road in the woods, which is what we would
rather
prefer.
That was your preference.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think when we met you two for the first time, you were coming down that dirt track in the campground.
Yeah.
You're like plunging like from the top of the hill to the bottom of the hill,
yeah,
like right towards the
most
fire.
Most exciting part of the whole route.
Yeah.
Totally. But no, that just seems like from that exposure, from that first exposure, it seems like that was the right choice for you guys to continue to look for the path less pedaled, as it were.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. So from there, so these two other guys were with you as well?
Yeah. Actually, you know, another big factor was the Bakken oil field.
Uh-huh.
That was a huge factor.
Are we talking about North Dakota?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because that's
like trying to get around that.
Yeah. Like unanimously, every single local person that we talked to was like, "Do not go there. Don't go there. Don't go there."
And what year was this?
2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as I understand, Adventure Cycling has changed their routing because they used to send you through Williston.
Yeah.
Because it's like the only town, really.
Yeah. We had the updated maps, too.
Okay.
And people that we talked to were still like...
They said, don't do that either.
Yeah, don't.
Okay.
Which almost made us want to go there more.
Uh-huh.
We were like, how bad is it, really? I don't know. Just like...
What were the dangers? Was it infrastructure?
I mean,
or was
man
it...
camps was the word I heard the most.
Was what?
Man camp.
Man camp?
Yeah.
Well, you got a bunch of dudes, right?
Right. Like, okay.
Working in the oil
industry. A lot of dudes, burly dudes, working all day long, drunk.
Right.
Single, living in giant camps and
felons.
And I'm sure a lot of that was grossly overblown by people who
certainly
were afraid of it, but at the same time, there was some shit going down. Like, the one thing I had heard quoted a few times was like just a female jogger plucked up off the road by some dudes in a truck and never to be seen of again. And
mother of God.
Like, raped, murdered, and buried in the desert or something like that.
There's also not a whole lot going on in North Dakota.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
When I moved out here, I drove close to where we would be riding, and, you know, it was that I knew about, or you know, Mount Rushmore, Black Hills, the Badlands.
Sure.
So, you know, it was kind of an easy decision.
So you went that way instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how was Rushmore, like,
Wait,
are
you saying you rode through the Badlands on your bicycles?
Mm-hmm. It was great.
You've stolen my dream. You've stolen my dream, goddammit.
Maybe he's empowered your dream.
You can do it. Yeah? It can be done. All right, let's go.
There we go. I'm out.
You can point out some good fields to sleep in out there.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine in that part of the country, like, there's I think of it as like a place where there is so little. Obviously, there are things, and you saw them. It's beautiful. But is it easy to camp outdoors? Is it easy to like just kind of plop down anywhere and have no one find you?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you haven't done it a lot in your head, you're getting all worked up about, you know, who can see me from the road, whose property is this, am I going to have to deal with some redneck at 2 in the morning? And, I mean, I think that's a natural fear people have when they're sleeping, especially
right.
when we're so used to sleeping in our homes and our beds safe. But, yeah, I'd feel a lot more brazen about it now. And,
yeah, definitely.
Well, I think the rudest awakening we had was some angry bulls in the pasture.
Okay, not people.
Yeah, not people.
Bulls.
That was in the Badlands, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, really?
A huge bull on the hillside just screaming at us.
Ranging it.
Yeah. Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
So, how did you deal with that?
We got out of there. Yeah. We packed up. And
so you were already like, tents were set up or whatever. Did you guys take a tent or were you sleeping like?
I did.
Okay.
You brought a very complex system.
Yeah. Hammock and bivy sack.
Oh, okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so
deluxe
the hammock needs a place to string it up to, I'm assuming?
Yeah, and I was assuming I wouldn't get to use it a whole lot,
okay.
But I was surprised at how much I did.
Pleasantly
surprised. I probably slept in the bivy sack half a dozen times.
Okay, so Spencer gets the hammock. Bobby has a tent. Small tent?
Yep.
Like a single serve?
Yep.
Okay,
very
nice.
Small.
Nice. So for both of you, I'm curious, what was your first night on that? Or had you done like wild camping before where you were in an unauthorized location?
No, that was probably my first like experience with free camping.
Okay, so what was the feeling like? Were you super nervous, or were you okay with it?
Well, we camped in that farmer's yard in Washington. That was before that, right? Remember that?
Oh yeah, I guess that was like my first taste of that.
Okay,
and that was, you know, my feelings were punctuated by needles laying on the ground and goat head thorns everywhere.
Ah, like tree needles?
Cans. No, like...
No, like meth needles.
Yeah.
Or, no, I mean, yeah.
Whatever.
Whatever you use your needles for.
Diabetes.
Yeah. Exactly. Insulin.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay. So, wow, that's an interesting place
to
sleep.
Like, yeah, but, you know, sometimes if you tour the way that we do, which is kind of all willy-nilly.
Fast and loose.
Yeah. But then you end up in places where you're like, well, this is where I'm staying.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
You just, but like more often than not, honestly, you can find a good place to sleep. And actually much more often than I had expected, somebody will gladly let you sleep in their yard or...
Like if you ask, it's okay usually.
Yeah. Fire departments, YMCAs, we had amazing luck with.
Really?
Yeah. Never turned down by a YMCA.
Nice.
That's pretty bad.
And they have showers that you can go pay for in the morning.
Nothing wrong with that.
And coffee.
Yeah. So. These are all good things.
And then some people, if you just tell them what you're doing, they will insist that you come and stay with them and that they cook you a meal and you tell them all about your adventure.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Which,
yeah.
You know, it's not going to be every night, but we had more of those than I was expecting.
Oh, yeah, by far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our friend Aaron Green wrote that book called We Were Sons, which
was
all about
exactly
the, yeah,
about
just
that.
Like the experience of being a bicycle tourist and riding across the country and finding people who are like, our kids moved away. Stay with us. We'd like to cook you enormous meals or something like that. So, yeah. The generosity of strangers is always cool. It's very inspiring. I always feel like whenever I'm the recipient of that, I'm like, I would like to find a way to do this for someone else someday.
Yeah. But, that was what I took from that experience for sure.
Yeah.
I was just shocked by how many strangers are so nice out there who will invite you into their homes and cook you dinner.
Yeah. Any colorful individuals you stayed with?
People in Ithaca?
Well, I was going to say the guy in Montana.
Oh.
And Laurel. Ben in Laurel, Montana.
Yeah, if you're listening.
Yeah, hi, Ben.
Probably not.
He probably is.
4th of July in eastern Montana. So barren, hot, miserable.
Dry.
Very, very dry.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just stopped at some bar that was... It turned out to be, it was a brewery that was closing down permanently.
Oh, that day. Really?
Yeah.
That was the last day?
More or less. And
you had the last beers. What was this? Do you remember what it was
for
called?
For free. They were
really?
Emptying their kegs.
Really?
They were like all the beers.
Something about a train yard.
I don't remember
that.
Train yard brewing in eastern Montana.
Yeah. So we stop in and start drinking a bunch of free beer, and one of the guy's regulars shows up, and we get to talking, and before we even really like introduce ourselves, he's like, okay, we're partying 4th of July at my house. You're staying with me. Here's the keys to my quad.
Wow.
And so it's Bobby and I and Luke and David there drinking, and I drive his quad up to his house and check it out, and he takes all of our panniers and crap in his truck and takes it up there, and we basically drank and partied with this guy at his house and slept in his RV for like 3 days. And he was a
for 3 days.
He was an avid hunter, an avid like ultra endurance trail racer, runner racer.
Okay.
He was a rep for a big gun company, so he had just one night was just him showing us all his crazy military firearms while watching a UFC fight. It was it was amazing. It was deliciously amazing. And
cultural immersion. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did he let you guys fire guns?
We talked about it. We were going to go shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did something else not as cool.
Errands. Yeah. It was just, we needed to get to an outdoor store. And
I have to buy some propane. Yeah.
Yeah.
We blew it is basically what
it was. So it goes. Yeah, I met up with some friends in Wyoming back in 12, and they were like, you know, here's this enormous, like, it was the sort of gun that you set up on, like, its own struts to kind of position it.
Yeah.
And then we fired at a rock, like, a quarter mile away from us or something like that. So it was fun. Guns are fun when they're not pointed at anything in particular, I think.
If you can suspend your understanding of this is made specifically for killing people.
I thought this was made to blow up rocks on the side of a hill.
Look, it's working right now.
Nice. So these guys you were traveling with, what? How do you describe them?
They were a little more well off than we were. They both worked in advertising, and they had kind of taken a different approach to meeting the same ends that we were. They wanted to do a bike trip, but they were looking to do a lot of photojournalism and video documentary stuff.
They brought a lot of nice camera equipment and computers.
Gotcha.
And they were doing portraits of Americans, is I think what they called it. So basically they were doing this trip, and they would do little write-ups, mini bios of everyone who helped
Americans
them along the way.
Or
people who they thought were interesting or had a story to tell.
Nice.
But yeah, we kind of fell into each other's grooves pretty quickly. And
did you guys get a profile in their little project then?
I think we did, actually.
Yeah, in Wisconsin.
You qualify as Americans?
They took our picture right before we split up in Milwaukee.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Wrote about us.
Very cool. Did you guys carry equivalent weight? If they had cameras and stuff, did you have any sort of like special treats that you brought along to entertain yourself
besides
with on the trip?
The Kipper snacks.
We had a...
I remember that.
This is the first time and last so
time,
far
yeah.
I've had those.
Yeah, I just got to say, Brock, I don't feel so good is the one thing that stands out in my mind when I think of the interaction. Like, that's the referenced quote when Bobby and I refer to meeting you guys.
Yeah, and that's my wife saying, I think I have food poisoning.
Yeah, and then the sounds of somebody vomiting.
Right.
And it's not a... I don't mean to poke fun at your
no,
wife.
No, no. I think she sees it in a good humor.
No,
so
she took it very...
She did.
Very tongue-in-cheek.
Right, and we all woke up and had coffee the next morning.
Yeah,
all
she
works
was
out
fine
okay
the next morning.
Oh, yeah.
Back to what you were saying, we actually have a funny story about what we were carrying.
Oh,
yeah,
please.
We started a game at some point.
I already forgot about this.
It was a potato that we bought in Idaho.
Oh, yeah.
Naturally.
Uh-huh.
And at some point, we started hiding the potato in each other's gear.
Nice.
So, you know, whatever. So we're breaking camp in the morning and someone runs to the bathroom. Then you go, stash it in their gear.
Oh, nice.
And then we have to wait for that person to find it. And we did that all the way from Idaho to Milwaukee,
that's
Wisconsin.
That's fantastic.
And in the last hour that we were together, it changed hands like 5 times.
It was a hot potato.
Yeah.
You guys just trying to get in.
Yeah.
Just like the frenzy.
Because we knew once whoever gets it at that point, they lose. That's,
they lose
that's the
game.
The game.
There are no winners, only one loser.
And of
fantastic
course, they had the potato at the end.
Yes.
Oh, they did?
Nice. Yeah. We won.
Okay, there we go. Nice.
Did you guys ever hear about it afterwards?
Yeah, it took a long time for them to find it. I think they made it to Ohio. Yeah.
Okay.
They had a big Bob trailer with the bag so you could bury that sucker.
Oh,
deep.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
It was like under the third lens or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the what was the reaction when someone finds the potato? What do they do?
I mean, you now know what you have to do, which is to hide the potato again.
Okay.
You know?
Was there any sort of like a...
Like that. A little shame, and okay. It got pretty gross. You
oh,
know,
I bet.
Baking in a PVC pannier for 10 hours a day.
No longer fit for consumption.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Game gets more challenging as it progresses. And
nice.
You could, there's even some strategy behind that. You could pretend that you could have hid the potato a long time ago, but pretend that you never found it. Where's that potato?
I wish I knew what happened to it.
The other person's not suspecting.
Like you never have to announce the fact that you have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Nice. That's fantastic. Is this a russet?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think okay. so.
Or Yukon Gold, perhaps.
Okay.
Standard russet.
3-4 inches long?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Just the right size for nesting somewhere down in someone else's bag.
Yeah.
Nice.
Something about, I just realized potatoes take a really, they take a lot of fuel on your stove to cook.
Yes.
Oh.
You know?
I didn't think
so.
About that.
It was always kind of like it was something I had carried for a while initially and was like, I'm never going to cook this thing.
Yeah, you start out with the intention of, oh, I'm going to eat this someday. And then you're like, well, I guess not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Potatoes have a good carbohydrate release, as I understand. It's like at least a baked potato, easier to eat. Like, you know, you have one of those and it's like it'll keep you kind of sort of satisfied for several hours after you eat one. So I should eat more potatoes. Let's go do that later.
Okay. I'm all right with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Many ways you can eat potatoes.
Yeah. Right, right. It can be fried in sunflower oil. They can be fried in other kinds of oil. there are many ways to fry potatoes.
You can
oil
can
them,
slice
mash
them.
The stick them in a stew, I believe.
Potatoes. What were some tight spots you guys got into?
Oh, we got a gun pulled on us.
Really?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
First time got a gun pulled on me.
What were the circumstances?
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. Very hot and very thirsty.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Were we still in Montana or had we gone a little bit south by that point?
I think we were in Wyoming.
We were on tribal land. I remember that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, we were on a reservation. Yeah.
But not a member of the tribe who pulled the gun on us.
No, no, no.
Oh, really?
I think it was outside of the reservation.
Some white dude.
We had, it was like, we were 70-something miles into the ride, and it was one of the hottest and most exposed days of our trip, for sure. It was
okay.
Not 90s, absolutely no trees around.
So daylight.
Oh, yeah. The worst possible time to be on a bike and the worst place. And
sure.
I felt good because I brought a bunch of water, and I still went through all of it.
Everybody was completely out of water at this point.
Wow.
And, we found one house.
Like a little cluster of houses in the middle of nowhere.
Sure. So it's like a desperation sort of like, we got to get some water from these guys.
Yeah.
So you knock on the door?
No, there was this old guy in a truck who about to take off, and we roll up and we're like, hey, we're us. Thirsty water you have, and he's like yeah, there's a spigot over there, and like gestures towards a house and pulls off, drives off, and I don't know if it was you and I, or maybe
it was you and Luke.
You and okay, so we just go up to the spigot, start pouring water and drink some down, and out comes a guy around the side of the house with a Glock in his hand, and he's just like, who are you and what the hell are you doing with my water?
Right.
And I like stumbled over my words trying to be like, there's a guy and he said
guy water, said it was okay.
White beard, and he just looked at me really funny, and
that fucker set you up.
Yeah, I felt very set up.
Well,
and then
actually he did, but we'll get to that.
Oh
yeah,
God,
okay.
Yeah, so he didn't shoot us.
That's good.
That's good. Yeah.
You're still here.
Didn't really take too much water, just, you know, turn around,
right? Like, well, I guess he doesn't want to share.
The third person in this little community walks up to us with a couple of bottles of water.
Oh,
like, oh, that's very nice. And she's like, don't drink that water,
it'll make you sick. You can't
with
drink
the
that
stuff
water
out of the spigot that you've already
done. Definitely make you sick. And after I basically filled a bottle up and chugged it as fast as possible.
Like, it's too late for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait,
they're fine though.
What's he pulling a Glock on you for? Like, like if it's gonna make you sick, I don't know. Like, anyways, people are weird.
So it was about the principle of the thing,
right? Yeah. Right, exactly. It's
one
still
of
his,
city folk
still
coming
his
into my community, drinking my poison water.
Thanks.
Yeah. Well,
so there's a couple directions I want to go. Like, one, did you get sick? then? Did you end up like getting really sick?
I think as soon as she said it, psychologically, I was like, oh, I just drank a bunch of poison.
Yeah.
I think all it really was like heavy mineral content, maybe make you irritated.
Okay.
But,
okay. It will not kill you.
Yeah, it wasn't like full of methane or agricultural runoff or anything like that.
You couldn't light it on fire. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I actually don't know that. Maybe I just processed it, but I'm not dead. That's all I know.
Could still be building, yeah. Well, I was just thinking, there's one place in town where you don't get tainted water, but you do get other tasty things to drink.
And it's way less likely you're going to get a gun pulled on you.
That's right. It's statistically almost 0%. We don't know about the concealed carry, but the Beer Mongers, Southeast Division and 12th, you can definitely go in there and get something to slake your thirst. We are enjoying right now the Elliott IPA from Ex Novo.
This is really good.
Yeah. Amongst others. And you're enjoying, what was that?
This was a new thing that they had there. It's always like finding a little treasure whenever I go to the non-alcoholic section and there's something new there.
Yeah, well, your options are limited just by nature of the fact that it's called the Beer Mongers.
Right. And, you know, I don't blame them for that.
People got to buy their beer somewhere. But to find something that's non-alcoholic, you found, what is this?
It's just called Cola.
Cola. But it's Italian.
Yeah, the whole label is all in Italian.
Yeah, it's got like a nice dimple in the bottom of the bottle, like a wine bottle would.
Yep. I'm gonna
very classy.
Hold it like a wine bottle. Maybe I should have chugged it like that.
How was this cola?
It didn't have a whole lot of flavor. It was subtle. I'll say that.
Right.
Need some high fructose corn syrup in there.
Yes, exactly.
Bump up the intensity on that cola.
Instead of Zucchero di Canna, which I would believe is sugar cane or cane sugar.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yes. It, sugar of the cane. Right.
Sugar
I speak Italian. Yeah. So, yes, the Beer Mongers, Southeast Division and 12th, where, by the way, we were commenting when we bought our stuff earlier tonight that they have the impulse buy sort of thing up by the cash register.
Oh, yeah.
But instead of being like, you know, 99
Gum
cent items or whatever.
And Cosmopolitan.
Right. You can get the Beer Mongers beer made by a fellow in Bend for $40 a bottle. So, like, the impulse buy is not the cheap. It's like the, oh, I've been meaning to buy a really tasty beer that has been aged for years, and it costs a lot. And there, it just jogged my memory.
It was aged about 3 years?
About that much, yeah. And it's very specifically, I'm forgetting the name of the brewery, sadly. But it was made by one of the guys who used to work here, I think.
Yes, who used
I'm falling
to work
down
at
on the job.
The Beer Mongers.
Yeah. All that to say that the Beer Mongers at Southeast Division and 12th is a fantastic place to get your beverages. So, yeah.
I'm looking up that brewer.
Oh, sounds good. All right, let me know when you find it. So, all right. So, you guys on this tour, what was your longest day? Like, how far did you go in a day?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good story, too. 120-something.
All right.
Was that in the gorge, or was that in...
No, that was when we were trying to make Ragbri.
Right.
So, yeah. at some point in South Dakota...
Sioux Falls, when we stayed with...
Well, it was before that. So I grew up in Wisconsin, and my friend, I messaged her and was like, hey, we're going to be in Wisconsin in a couple of days. Do you want to hang out? And she's like, well, actually, I'm going to be on this ride called Ragbri.
Right.
Yeah,
if anybody's familiar with that.
The Register's annual
great bicycle ride across Iowa.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. Apparently one of the oldest, or maybe the oldest, bike touring events in the United States.
It's almost like Pedalpalooza in Portland times like 7.
Yeah.
Or something.
It was amazing. But definitely recommend anybody.
Yeah. A rolling carnival of fun. So you guys participated in this in the middle of your tour?
Yeah. We didn't intend on it at all, but we just realized that our distance from the start lined up with generally what we were doing. We had to do one long day, 120-mile day.
Okay, yeah.
But it was very flat in that part of the country.
Yeah.
And we made it.
So what was Ragbri like?
It was crazy for us because we had been we hadn't like seen people.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Bike touring is a very loose way to describe this event.
Yeah.
Well, there's so many other things happening, right? Because there's costumes and there's beer and there's water slides.
It's a drunken festival through Iowa where the people participating basically run the towns they're in.
Yeah.
It's
an orgy of bicycling.
Yeah.
It is. It was really surreal for us because we no longer had to think about where we were going
or where
to get food or like where to get water anymore. Everything's just there.
Yeah.
Like you just wake up and then you just follow people. And it's just this ongoing stream of people for hours.
And it's just, are people just like handing up food as you pass? They're like, hey, you want a hot dog? That sort of thing?
People...
Mostly alcohol in that fashion.
Okay. Yeah. But you just like at any point you just like raise your hand and shout beer. A beer will just like be thrown at you.
Kind of like a grilled by bike ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. That's very cool. And 7 days long, is that right?
Yep.
More
seven
or less.
Days.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was. I didn't realize how beautiful Iowa was.
Right.
Lake Okoboji was a place that we stayed at, and that struck me as particularly nice.
A lot of lakes in Iowa.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have thought there'd be a lot of lakes there.
We were on kind of the northern section of Iowa.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, we had a particularly flat route that year as well.
Oh, like the route changes from year to year.
Yeah. I think it always goes west to east, but the route changes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember looking into that when I was thinking about doing a cross-country tour a couple of years ago, and it sounded like an awesome event.
Yeah.
Our timeline didn't line up with it, though, so.
One of these days.
Yeah, we should take the train. Where's the nearest Amtrak stop? I mean.
In Iowa?
Maybe there isn't one.
I don't think it goes
Lincoln Service, maybe? I don't know.
Falls, maybe.
We were talking about doing it again, and it's feasible to train out and then ride to wherever it starts, so long as.
Yeah.
It doesn't start too far south. I mean, you could still ride.
Sure.
Yeah.
Ride overnight.
Yeah. Almost the majority of the people doing it are doing with some sort of support group.
Uh-huh.
A lot of them are on teams, I guess.
Yeah.
Sure.
And it's a lot of old school buses that have been converted into team buses.
That's what I've heard. Yeah. Like
and a lot of beer koozies, too.
Party mobiles and beer koozies.
Yeah.
Like kits, like not in the traditional sense of a kit, but like. Team names, team outfits, team school bus, team drinking games.
There you go.
So a lot of them are more in it for the party. Like if you get too drunk or don't want to ride your bike, you can get on the bus if you want.
There we go. There's a designated driver hanging out waiting to take you.
And some people do it self-supported, and we were referred to as baggers,
I believe.
Baggers.
Identifiable by our... throngs of bags and shit everywhere on our bikes.
Look at all this stuff that they have with them. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So it's fun to do either way, but if you wanted to go more to party, it'd be fun to do that on a little road bike or a silly bike.
Sure.
Do it on a tall bike.
Did you guys
like
see
that.
A lot of freak bikes out there? Like, is that a big distinctive of it, or is it just a lot of people on standard bicycles more often?
A lot of road bikes.
Okay, yeah.
And a lot of people who look like this may have been their, this is all the bicycling they do.
They bought the bike for Ragbri. Yeah.
Yeah. Or this is the only time they bring it out is
to Ragbri. Yeah. That occasionally happens here in town, too.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
It's better than not at all, I suppose.
Right. Go ride your damn bike. Yeah.
If you're just a bridge peddler, if you're an annual bridge peddler, and that's it. You know.
Yeah. Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard some crazy stories about bridge pedal, too. But so when you left the Ragbri ride, then what? Where did you go from there?
Well,
we had to
break out and collect ourselves.
Yeah, we did not complete all 7 days of the ride.
It's a lot of partying and drinking if you have to carry your shit every day. And then you know that when you leave Iowa, it's not over. There's a whole other half of a country left.
Yeah.
So we had to just bug out and, you know, get our heads back in shape.
Makes sense.
And also there was a lot of, this ride goes through a lot of small towns that were kind of overwhelmed with the amount of people. You know, I think it's like 25,000 people that participate.
Yeah, it's a lot of people.
You know, so the grocery stores just get emptied out. So
sure.
Oh, we show up late because we were kicking it at the beach all day long.
Sure.
And then there's like a can of green chilies.
And that's it.
Yeah.
No tuna, no Cliff Bars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we let 4 or 5 days?
Yeah, I think we had two days left of it that we skipped out on.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it was the right decision. It's like, I can't take any more partying.
We got drunk. We saw Lance Armstrong. Like, we did the Bragg
thing. There you go.
Yeah.
That's what you do. Yeah. And I would imagine, too, at some point you probably also kind of crave solitude. Like,
yes.
Being out on the road, you kind of get used to being alone.
Yeah.
And camping under the stars and that sort of thing. And then at a certain point, like... if you've been out there long enough, it's like interacting with people is hard. And then you do that for a while, and you're like, I need the wild again.
Exactly. That's, yeah. I would say, yeah, that sums it up perfectly.
Okay, yeah. What stands out to both of you as like maybe like your takeaway memory? Like what's one of the things that you think of as like this is kind of like the apex of the whole tour? It's okay if you don't have just one.
Yeah, it's been a little while. We already touched on this, but overall, the most outstanding thing, not a particular thing, but most outstanding thing was not the scenery or the roads or the cycling, but the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was incredibly redeeming of America.
Sure.
I had no idea that it would have been like that, the amount of, you know, hospitality we right, received yeah. from people. And yeah, I was so surprised by that. And definitely helps incentivize people who are a little shy or a little worried about getting out and doing something like this. Because, uh-huh. you know, you leave your hometown and everything feels very foreign and scary. But
people are going to be in your yeah. corner.
If you're doing something as cool as this, there are people out there ready to receive you.
Very cool. Yeah. Did that change the way that you you look at people when you're walking around Portland?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I feel like I know a lot of the people in Portland already, but yeah, like a lot of the experiences we had were locals wherever we were telling us to worry about the next town over. Like, don't go there. Those suckers are going to steal all your shit and
their
leave
football
you high
team
and dry.
Sucks.
Yeah, exactly. And it was both people talking about other towns, or we had a lot of white people who were very afraid of Native Americans
okay.
and Native territories. And
yeah, a lot of people told us.
Do not camp in the reservation.
Well, it's actually illegal for you guys to...
That probably wasn't their reasoning for warning us.
Sure.
Yeah, you know.
I wouldn't
everybody
defend.
We met yeah. in the reservations was very nice.
I bet.
Yeah, right. So unwarranted then. It's like don't always believe everything you hear.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right on.
Okay, yeah. Bobby, anything that stands out to you as kind of like your prime memory from the trip?
Without a doubt that. This is the same. Just the generosity yeah. of people out there.
Okay.
And it was a lot of a lot of connecting the dots was really interesting for me too. With that, urban areas are actually seemed like they're a lot more stressful to navigate on a bike than, rural areas, rural communities.
Right. More going on.
Yeah, more going on, and the navigating through those areas is sometimes kind of difficult, whether or not the city has good bike infrastructure
yeah.
established. And warm showers is good though. Warm showers is an incredibly useful resource.
Right. Couch surfing for bicycle tourists.
Yeah.
It's nice to every now and again kind of have a connection somewhere, especially if you're not sure where you're going to stay or if you think that it's possible to find a place to stay. Wild camping works out really well in the wild, but sometimes in the city it's not as easy to do.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
We had kind of we didn't ever buy a hotel ever.
No.
What was the tow truck place?
Zips.
A tow truck place.
Thank you, Zips.
Yeah.
So yeah, we stayed at a tow truck place.
One time.
Nice. They had like a little area for people who come and buy a new truck, and they, you know, it was a place where people travel to from far away. So
okay.
Like a place for people to
premium sit. Tow truck emporium.
Yeah.
Sure.
And
wait, so not a towing service, but like a place that sells tow trucks.
Yes.
Okay.
And a place in which Bobby's dad had previously bought a very large tow truck. Oh, so he gave them a call and we had the premium suite that evening.
That's fantastic.
Which was good. That was like, you know, one of few beds that we ever slept in. I think.
Yeah.
We didn't, I don't know. It's, I don't like to pay a lot for a place to sleep. Really.
And yeah. And why would you?
Yeah.
If you can, yeah.
Got a nice tent and a sleeping bag. I'd rather be outside.
Totally, yeah.
And we're pretty spoiled here in Oregon. Like, a lot of tent camping in the Midwest, like, they don't care that you're some cool guy on a bike. They're like, tent spots are $24.
Right.
And there's no exceptions.
Yeah. Really expensive. There's no hiker-biker sites.
Yeah, yeah. That is somewhat unique to Oregon and the coast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is funny how that doesn't always happen elsewhere. So, yeah.
Provincial parks in Canada also were very expensive.
Right. I remember doing the research for that. What was Ontario like? Did you guys, did you speak French?
No.
No.
Welland, Ontario was a pretty good experience for us.
Okay.
The day that we were trying to reach Niagara Falls and cross back into the United States. So the potato was kind of an ongoing theme in
yes.
our trip. We were riding along this bike path, and there had been military exercises going on the whole way while we were riding this. So were there, you know, people in military fatigues or whatever.
Okay, yeah.
Canadian military.
Yeah.
They got a few.
Yeah.
A few.
So it was like red and white camouflage.
Yeah. Doesn't work very well.
All the camo is made of like maple leaf designs. Yeah.
But anyway, some kids jumped out of the bushes with a potato cannon.
Really?
Like, what?
Just appear out of the bushes with a potato cannon.
And y'all know what a potato cannon
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like CO2 or forced air? Yeah.
Hairspray.
Hairspray or, yeah, some combustion.
So we're going along this bike path, and there's every 500 yards, there's these little, speed pylons that you have to, like, weave through to slow yourself down.
Okay.
And these kids jump out right by those pylons with this potato cannon. I look at them, and I'm like, these guys are up to no good. Bobby's ahead of me, and I turn to look at the pylons, and I start to turn back around, and my left front pannier hits one of the pylons.
Oh,
and okay. I go from, like, 20 miles an hour to no miles an hour.
Oh, shit. Ooh. So you're threading the needle, and the needle doesn't thread.
No, not at all.
Okay.
And smash up my front wheel handlebars.
Oh,
completely tacoed.
Oh, yeah, done.
Oh, man.
I thought I was sure I broke my thumb.
Did they shoot you with the cannon then?
They turned and looked at me for 2 seconds, and they're like, wow, that's a thing that happened. And then they turned right back around and went to the potato cannon.
Yeah, remarkably unfazed.
Like, if there was a car accident right in front of you, you'd be like, oh, huh. All right, I got to go now.
There it is, yeah.
I got this potato cannon to shoot.
Oh, wow. So how did you recover from that? Did you have to build a new wheel?
Oh, man. It started raining, and I was, like, limping
along.
Right
as soon as you taco the wheel.
Yeah. And we're in nowhere, Ontario, and found, like, yeah, this is probably a great story.
Did you steal a dream catcher while you're on reservation land or something?
Oh, my God. It's... So I limp into town, find a bike shop that's open and that has something that we make work. And like, I'm like, hey, I'm a bike mechanic. I'm not going to ask you for a discount. He's like, I'll give it to you for cost.
Wow.
Gets me a new wheel. Bobby looks at warm showers. We don't really have internet connection, like 4G connection, because it's Canada. But Bobby, you look out at warm showers.
Yeah, and found one of two people there. Who are on warm showers in this town, and I don't think she was even set to hosting at that time. She wasn't available to host, but out of desperation, I was like, hey, we're in a bit of a pickle here.
How about this? Yeah.
Can we sleep in your yard?
It's a taco pickle.
And she messaged back right away, actually, and her family was having a...
She lived in town, and she was just back in town after traveling, and her parents' like 40th wedding anniversary weekend.
She had just come back from traveling Europe, bike touring Europe for 11 months.
Okay.
So she was like, well, this is not a great time, but okay.
Sure. She had that travel magic on her still. She's like, I guess I owe it to these guys.
And it was great.
She first was like, you know, so this is going on. We have a little loft thing you guys can hang out with or hang out at and stay there. And it turned into us going to the anniversary party and partying with these people, these French Canadians who partied till like 4 a.m. I'm like nodding off, standing up, and her parents are still dancing.
That's like the French side, right?
Oh my God. So much energy. And
that's fantastic.
We partied with these guys for like 3 days in a row.
That's so great.
Yeah.
We got haircuts. We got tattoos.
She's a tattoo artist. Melissa, if you're out there, she's in South Africa now, right? On the off chance you're listening, Melissa, we're forever in your debt for your hospitality.
Tattoos.
What tattoos did she give you?
I got a scissors.
There we go. Spencer, you got one too?
I got parts added to the derailleur.
There we go.
Yeah, her thing is she is a traveling tattoo artist. Like, that's her whole way of promoting herself as a tattoo artist and supporting herself as a bike tourist. And
wow.
She had just done Europe doing this and built a whole bunch of contacts and spent a whole lot of time in Europe and came back and
yeah
she offered us tattoos. And we were going to meet up with her and do some more stuff this summer, and then she moved to South Africa.
Yep.
So it goes.
Yeah. But yeah.
That's a very unique way to support yourself, number one, as a bicycle tourist. And number two, just to, like, it's a very unique luxury item. Like, everybody has, like, something they bring on tour. Speaking of which, what do you guys, what's your luxury item?
Besides the potato. And the kippered seeds.
You know, I don't do it anymore around town. I used to a lot, but on tour especially if you have to do like an interstate day.
Uh-huh.
Nice headphones.
Okay.
And an MP3 player.
Quality headphones.
Yeah. You know.
Do you endorse a certain brand?
I was a big fan of Klipsch.
Yeah. Okay.
We were both.
I can't find the ones I like anymore, but yeah, if you're on the shoulder and you just have deal with all day long,
sure,
you just get your dorky helmet mirror set up and you plug in and you just chug along and
there you go.
Listening to podcasts is great too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, information kind of helps. It distracts you from what you're up to.
The world is still going on out there. Yeah. Let's see what's up.
Right.
Sometimes for example, as we were leaving Niagara Falls, I listened to the This American Life episode about Niagara Falls.
Oh,
that was kind of
cool.
Relevant.
Yeah, yeah.
It was
nice.
Really interesting.
Don't you love that sort of like coincidence when something – I find that happens to me a lot. Like either that or like something that one person is talking about in a certain podcast shows up in an unrelated podcast. You're like, it's not just current events. It's like, oh, they mentioned this really obscure thing and so did this other thing. So was your luxury item also the headset or earbuds?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Really strong sunscreen.
Okay. There
we
go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, Bobby and I had different approaches to the sun issue.
Uh-huh.
He had very heavy zinc oxide sunscreen, which turned him purple.
Right. Scorched earth, as it were.
Yeah. And I went for the dorky sun hat, neck gaiter sort of thing.
Like the cloth approach.
Tie-dye arm.
Oh, yeah. Really dorky, like non-thermal arm sleeves. Just
okay.
Just because heat fatigue will just decimate you out there.
It will knock you out, yeah.
There's not enough water you could carry to deal with that.
Aaron, have you had heat fatigue on any sort of long ride?
Only when I stop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I feel like on our Crater Lake trip, I feel like there was at least one day where you were just like beaten by the sun.
Yeah.
Or by the elevation. Or both. Or mosquitoes.
It wasn't the gravel day. It wasn't Bohemian Mountain.
Although that would have done it. I mean, I don't know.
We were all pretty dead. Oh,
right.
No. It was Diamond Lake.
Diamond Lake.
The ascent before the descent down to Diamond Lake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you talk about being next to the interstate. It wasn't interstate, but it was a highway, a pretty busy highway. And
right, but the noise from the mosquitoes was as loud as an interstate
would be. Yeah. Well, and then, yeah, I biked through a constant cloud of mosquitoes. But
they seem to like you. Yeah.
That's because I'm so sweet. As far as heat fatigue, the only time where I could really point to like dehydration or like the real danger of dehydration or being hot,
yeah,
was going out to Multnomah Falls and back with my brother.
Oh yeah,
and you know we trucked that like in an afternoon.
Totally.
Probably came close to 80 miles all said and done. And we were coming back, and Dan loves to tell this story. You know, he kept going like, yeah, we got to stop, dude. I'm out of water, you're out of water. And I'm like, we're like 5-10 miles before Portland.
Yeah.
We can make it. We're going to do this. And he finally convinced me to stop, and I stopped. And I had an apple I'd been saving.
Uh-huh.
And so like just stopped. I felt great. I took one bite of the apple and my body was like, nope, nope, you're not having solids right now. You are not going to have solids.
Okay.
Like I had the bite in my mouth and I couldn't even chew it.
It was like, I need more fluid to make
like,
this happen.
Yep. I had to sit down and, like just ask my brother to go and like get me Gatorade.
There we go.
And all sorts of things. And yeah, it wasn't until I stopped that I realized how dehydrated I was. I imagine if I had, you know, it continued to ignore my brother and pressed on, I would be crossing the Portland, you know, what is it, the urban boundary or whatever.
And then falling over.
Yeah, and then just completely falling
over. Yeah.
We kept a lot of, when we were in near Detroit, we bought bulk maltodextrin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's good for water retention, right?
It's a good fast-burning carbohydrate.
Oh, okay.
Apparently a lot of time trial riders will use that.
Okay.
So it's not too sweet to taste, but it's just like calories that you can instantly turn into glucose.
There we go.
For going, which I think earlier on in the trip we were eating a lot more, at least I was, super calorie dense, not good for you things. Like
Cheetos.
My favorite was like a chocolate milk and the chocolate Hostess pie, which is like 800 calories for $2 or something absurd.
Yeah. What beats that? Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
What was your shame food, Bobby?
Yeah, it was kind of the same. I opted for the cherry pie.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. Chocolate milk, cherry pie. Yeah. Seriously.
It's like you can guarantee or you can count on that being there. Whole milk, chocolate milk, the 98 cent.
I mean,
Hostess
it's at
pie.
Every corner
right.
store, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Soda, too, actually, at the end of a ride was really satisfying.
Seriously,
can bring you out of bonk pretty quickly.
Seriously, yeah. As Brian Benson likes to say, I think bicycle touring is great because it lets you eat like an asshole.
Oh, yes.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in and telling us about your tour. I really appreciate it. Anything else that you wanted to mention that we haven't gotten to?
I would say we encountered a lot of people who heard about what we were doing or saw what we were doing, and all they could say is, I could never do that.
Ah.
And our joke was, well, all you have to do is quit your job and you can do anything you want.
Right.
And it's kind of a joke, but it's exactly what we did.
It's also true.
And it's not as hard as you think, and you'll have a lot more fun than working that 3 months, probably.
Sure.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you're both employed, again, so it's not hard to find work. Yeah.
So do it. If you have any thoughts or any apprehension, so don't worry about it. Just do it.
There we go.
Don't overthink it too much. Just get out there.
Yeah.
Right. If you're worried that like things are going to change, you're going to miss stuff while you're gone. One author I remember was saying something about like, you know, go do it. It'll still be here when you get back.
Yeah.
And it's largely true. Mm-hmm. Except for Division Street. So that's what happened
Division.
To me. Well, again, Bobby Corbisser.
Yep.
And Spencer
Callahan.
Are you going to say my name?
Callahan.
Yeah.
I have forgotten your last name since the time we started. I apologize for that.
Is there a plan for future rides?
Oh, good question.
Guys? Yeah.
Are you guys going to like do some more?
This is the plan, actually.
Okay.
For the foreseeable future, I just want a bike tour.
Okay.
So
nice.
We got dreams of New Zealand and China and Southeast Asia and maybe South America. We're both working as much as we can to save up money to hopefully not be in America for as long as I can, at least. That's my plan.
Yeah. Southern Hemisphere for the winter.
There we go. Sure. Well, the Southern Hemisphere has far less exposure in the Northern Hemisphere, so it's probably well worth exploring and finding out about.
Yeah.
You know the Heyway podcast that was referenced some weeks back? It was Pete from the Cycle Tour Store. He did that roundup of podcasts. I've been listening to them, and they're people from New Zealand, and they're in South America right now, and sounds like
badass.
They're having a good time. Yeah. So, all right, well, this is probably a good time to wrap it up. So, again, Bobby and Spencer, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Appreciate it. All right.
Should we go for any particular aesthetic?
Do you guys want to give us a theme or a gestalt for our closing credits?
Gestalt, huh? Nice.
Bikes are cool. Go ride them.
Okay, there we go. What about winded?
Winded?
Or bonking?
We should read our credits as if we have bonked.
Sure.
All right.
Okay.
Can we do that?
I need to I'm gonna lean forward so I can read them off of here.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. We got the second monitor now.
All right.
Thank you, donors. We got a second monitor.
Well, and it was from a free box.
from a Freebox.
Thank you, Freebox.
But the donors bought our HDMI cable.
So that we could have the second monitor.
That's right. Okay. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Herb Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K. Shuttlefoot,
Katharina Mellemgard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson,
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson,
Cameron Lane, Richard Wazanski, Tim Mooney,
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubish, Matt Kelly,
Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller,
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan.
He's from California.
Who's a great Californian. Chris Gonzalez,
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, Andy Bronner,
Dave Knows, Chris Smith, Christy Kaster,
Caleb Jenkinson, JP Keeley, Peanut Butter Jar Matt,
Patrick Archain, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole,
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Alderson,
Drew the Welder, Anna, Chris Iskukis,
John Wasserman, Andre Johnson, Chile and Troy,
King of Vision, Josh Sisson, and Richard G.
And Guthrie Straw. Oh, hey, is that a chocolate milk?
Oh, we should definitely get some chocolate milk.
Yeah. Right. Oh, go brush your teeth.
Go to bed.
Bobby talked to the guy, so.
And what was it? Highway 212?
From Lewis and Clarkston to Camia.
Camia.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Okay, so one of the ACA routes, there are two options from Lewiston, Clarkston to Camia.
Yeah.
And then go over Lolo Pass.
Right.
One of them, I think, is 212, and it's a highway that has no elevation gain. It runs along a riverbed and is the obvious choice for a cyclist.
Oh, yeah.
But also the obvious choice for a lot of logging traffic, which was completely terrible. It was the worst. Like, it was, that was one of the worst days of our ride, for sure.
It goes through some farmland, and
no,
it's kind of like rolling hills.
No. River on one side, sheer cliff on the other. No shoulder.
I remember this.
Huge
we didn't
truck
go
traffic.
There. Yeah, okay, yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
And so bad that we that was the one day that we pulled off the side of the road, and I called the police department in town and asked. I was like, is there a better time? Like, we'll hang out here so we don't die. Is there a better time when there's going to be
genuinely
less traffic?
This is the first time I've ever been afraid for my life on a bicycle.
Yeah.
Not just so much traffic, but aggressive traffic,
right,
too. People
like
did not
buzzed by logging trucks, like, deliberately laying on their horns, getting as close as they could to you.
Is Highway 12?
Oh, nowhere to go. Sheer cliff,
12,
Jersey barriers, 12. River.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's 12. Anyway, so we called the police department in town, and he said, you boys shouldn't be riding on that highway, and you put that on your podcast. Click. So here we go.
Yeah, it's on the podcast.
Yeah, he just assumes that we have
ride
a podcast.
That highway.
He actually said, put that on your podcast?
He did. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay. And there it is.